Awesome, guys. We got Ezekiel Chu today, who is on Founders Go Naked. I'm super happy and excited to have him with us today because, yeah, he's just achieved so much. And despite his super young looks, if you can see him on video, he has achieved a tremendous amount of things. For example, he has been nominated as Entrepreneurs Magazine, in Entrepreneurs Magazine, as one of the top entrepreneurs to follow. And he is also the founder of Asia Forex Mentor. And this business has been running for 16 years. Not just that, he's been accredited by Investopedia and Benzinga. So any of you who are traders will know that. And he teaches bankers and how to actually trade. So, you know, this is like not some guy who just like kind of like, you know, is just doing it and then kind of like fooling everyone with his marketing. He's the real thing, right? So welcome, Ezekiel, to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Terrence.
Did I miss anything? Because like, I mean, you got a long list of achievements and lots of businesses. I just mentioned one or two of them, right?
No. That's fine. I guess the purpose of this or the scope of this is to really focus on like growing of the coaching business, the expert education industry, that kind of thing. So yeah,
right.
You got that okay. Pretty much covered.
Wonderful. Okay, Ezekiel, let's do some fun questions to get things rolling, to get you warm up as well. All right, so that people can also know a bit about you. So tell me, Ezekiel, what is your dream car?
Dream car? okay, so I'm a classic car guy. So nice. I love classic cars. The problem is being in Singapore, classic cars are a chore to get and to maintain and that kind of stuff versus the rest of the countries in the world, right? So I do have one it's by the company Misoka. So it's like a vintage Corvette Stingray on the shell, and then interior is the Japanese make. So we got the exterior vintage look and we got the interior stability of a Japanese engine. That's the best I can get in Singapore. So yeah, so I'm not really like a Ferrari, Lamborghini kind of guy, but really more of a vintage muscle, American muscle car kind of guy. Yeah.
Oh, nice. A man with tastes here, not your
I'm not sure. Old man tastes. Yeah.
And Ezekiel, what's your favorite country to visit?
To visit, that is the US. I go to the States pretty often. I like to do the long road drive over there. I like to go to Miami. Yeah, I love many countries, but US is something that me and my family really like to go.
Nice. And what's your favorite dish?
Favorite dish? Chicken rice.
Chicken rice.
Chicken rice.
Nice and simple.
Yeah, that's simple. I'm a simple man. I eat simply, I dress simply. Yeah, but yeah, I love, if it's anything, every single time when I go overseas, my wife will always, know, okay, what do you miss the most? Chicken rice. That's it. Chicken rice. Yeah.
Now, for those of you who don't know what chicken rice is, can you just quickly explain what a plate of chicken rice looks like, Ezekiel?
I think it's a chicken on the rice. Okay, no, it's different in the sense whereby, okay, in Singapore and in Malaysia, we got, it's like roasted chicken and we got white chicken that is chopped up on a plate of, I think it's Hainanese-based style in a sense. I love the chili on the rice, coupled with the chicken. It's something that I can eat every day. And it's cheap. And it keeps me full and happy.
Nice, nice. All right, yeah. What is the subject you hated the most in school?
Oh, accounting. Although I'm so-called in the finance field, I hated accounting when I was in my younger days. I'm better now. I'm not good now, but I really didn't like accounting. I couldn't balance any balance sheet. that's the killer for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I totally get it. Because I'm with you there too. What's the most embarrassing moment of your life?
Embarrassing moment. I'm really not sure. What did I call embarrassing moment? I'm not sure. Losing a lot of money, is it embarrassing? I don't think it's embarrassing to me. It's heartache. Embarrassing. I can't really think of it. When I think of it, I'll tell you.
Okay, no
maybe
worries.
Not in the public.
All right, Ezekiel, so you've been in business for like 16 years, probably more. Can you tell us about, you know, give us the highlights of your, you know, 16 or 20 year journey in business so that the listeners can get an overview of where you were, why you started, and where you are today?
I think it's interesting to, in a sense whereby, I mean, I wasn't born with a silver spoon, so I started learning how to invest and to do business at the age of 16 through reading. At a point, there wasn't really a lot of podcasts, webinars, seminars, that kind of thing. So it's really through reading books and really just trial and error. So I started investing when I was 16. Obviously stumbled, failed, lost a lot of money, that kind of stuff. And all this while through working part-time in a supermarket. So eventually things, long story short, things started to look up for me in trading after maybe 2.5 years. That's when I started to make so-called my first pot of gold. And even then, after which I still stumbled, that kind of stuff. I think how AFM started is also, AFM, it's not my first business in a sense whereby, but AFM is something that eventually, AFM means Asia Forex Mentor, eventually transpired to what it is today, whereby I guess we are pretty known in the industry, in the trading industry. So, and that transition from me, from friends kind of asking like what I did, how did I get about, friends started to see the little success that I have, right? Especially at a young age, while everybody's still studying, I was like, whenever it's playing, I was going home to trade and that kind of thing. So, and that started off with teaching friends to smaller group of people, to eventually larger group of people physically. And then I started to host seminars. But eventually it come to a point whereby I'm like, it's tiring for me. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to transition everything to online. So that's where the whole online education sector was built in AFM. So throughout the years, I mean, I did various stuff, even doing while figuring things out in trading and that kind of thing. I sold like what stuff on eBay. I sold jewelries, clothing. I have retail shops. I bought and sell gold. I ventured into various things. I think probably if you name it, affiliate marketing, whatever, everything that was online, everything that was offline, whatever you name it, I tried it. I think the real reason is that I really didn't like, or I would say that I always knew that from young I wanted to be in business. I didn't know what business, but I knew that I wanted to be a businessman. That's kind of transpired the whole journey. So throughout the years, yeah, apart from BFM, I built several other media companies and physical companies and etc. But the online world, marketing world, digital marketing world, education sector, it's something that really, it's something that I truly love. And I think it's my core passion and it's something that I feel that I can do really well. So that's why I'm in the business that I am in today.
Okay. So I mean, you look like you're 26, but you say you started when you're 16, but how old are you actually?
I'm 40 this year. Yeah. Okay. So I think it's the filter. Okay, not that I put in filter, but looks are deceiving. Everything looks better online, right? When you go offline, you start to see all the potholes in your face.
All those Tinder profiles can be pretty scary. Not that I know because I don't use it, but that's what I heard. So you obviously ventured into other businesses and all that kind of stuff. How did that work out? I mean, did it work out for you or is like, and then you kind of like stayed in your lane with trading ultimately or what happened there?
Okay. So trading is always the core. So what I believe is that, I mean, even like along the way, people will ask like, hey, why do you even charge people when you teach? Why do you even run a teaching business if you are so good in trading, right? The fact is that it's a business and it makes me money, right? And if it's anything, if I look at money like into two separate categories. One is an investment portfolio. One is the money that I make from a business that pumps into my investment portfolio. So the money in my investment portfolio, I want to keep it there. I don't want to withdraw for example, for my daily expenses, to manage my household, to pay for my mortgages and that kind of thing, right? Yeah. So I would like my money in my investment to continue to stay and to continue to compound inside my investment. So, which means to say that I would like to have an extra source of income, right? Mm. Business is the extra source of income. And it's something that I am really passionate about. I can talk about business all day long. I can talk about making money all day long. These are the two things that I'm really, really passionate about. Mm. So it really goes hand in hand for both aspects, whereby the money that I make from a business is now put into my investment portfolio. And there will be liquid portfolio, there will be illiquid portfolio. So that's and it's like, and every single time out there, there are new opportunities out there that I want to invest in and that kind of thing, right? So, which also means that where do I get those money from? Because those monies are stuck there that is in being compounded, right? So that's where I started to build businesses. And it's something that I really love too, and it's something that have really grown pretty well. So feeding the employees that we have, running strategic meetings and that kind of thing. So I would say AFM is the core businesses and one of the core businesses out there. But I'm so each of my business has its in a way its head, be it a CEO or that kind of thing. But I'm more of the strategic aspect behind them. But investing is still something, and trading is still something that is important for me because that's where I grow my wealth. So that's where the business sector is also something that because investing doesn't take you a lot of time. A lot of people think that, oh, trading is going to take you hours a day. You're going to spend 8 to 10 hours watching the screen, stay up at night doing the New York session, that kind of thing. No, it's not really. It doesn't really work that way in a sense whereby actually, really what I do is that I only spend like 30 minutes to an hour a day in be it trading, monitoring my investment portfolios, that kind of thing. And what I do is that I set alerts on my phone and then I go off the rest of my day doing the stuff like managing the business and maybe like going out with the family, that kind of thing. So yeah, and when my phone alert rings and pings me, that's where I start to look at the trade, and if it's worthy, I enter. If it doesn't, I will just move on and go back to doing what I was doing originally. So,
right.
I have two aspects of my life, which is business and investing. And this is something that I'm really, really passionate about.
Nice, nice. So you're passionate about both, right? Business and investing.
Yeah. So it's like, sometimes people say like, when are you going to retire? That kind of thing. Or like, I mean, everybody thinks like, okay, I'm going to retire. I'm going to stop doing and that kind of thing. I'm going to stop doing everything. And then I'm just going to play golf all day or whatsoever. I've tracked that. In my early 20s and in my late 20s, I actually retired twice. Whereby I just pretty much did nothing except to invest. And like I said, investing doesn't take a lot of time. So I pretty much did nothing for 2 whole years. I really got sick of it. It's like, I don't know, but for me, it's like, I'm not achieving anything after the first 6 months was great. Whoa, I had all fun. The first 1 year was all right. But I started all this, like having fun, doing nothing. You get tired of it. You get tired of doing nothing, right? And that's where it's like I'm also the overall big picture kind of guy. I'm like, is that the thing that I'm gonna do for the rest of my life? Like just lazing around, doing nothing, or can I have and make an impact in this world? So that's where I began to figure down and double down things that I really love to do. Business is one of it, impacting people is one of it. And that's where I decided to go full on into AFM because the finance sector is something and also the overall wealth sector into showing people in terms of like what I've gone through, what I've done, and how can we help to grow. I mean, like I said, I wasn't born with a silver spoon. So I believe being rich or not say being rich, but being financially free there is a firm methodology behind it, and it's all about working towards it with the right structure. So this is something that I feel is my calling to share that in the world. Yeah, that's why I'm really dedicated to AFM.
Nice. So, I mean, I hear a few themes here. First of all, I think this is so important to have passion for what you do. And the second thing is people, I mean, all over the world, people think like retirement is the end goal. But for you, you've retired twice and you realize, hey, that is not really the end goal. The end goal is really, I think what Naval Ravikant actually said is like, retirement is that when you love doing, you know, when you're so passionate about what you do, that not a single day feels like work. That is like true retirement. What's your thoughts on that?
Exactly. I mean, obviously, I can like, it's not to brag or do anything, but it's like, if you today you decide like, okay, or this week I'm not going to do anything, I just want to laze. I mean, or like this month I don't want to do anything, or I want to take a 3-month break, I want to take a 6-month break. I think these are all achievable in terms of the business world, in terms of the investing world. Like I say, investing that doesn't take a lot of time. The business is pretty much run by my team. So I am just in a strategic point of view. I can stick away and step back, all of that. But it's not something that drives me. I mean, at times you feel tired, that kind of thing. But I think I'm just going to stay that way all the way.
So no retirement, and basically.
Maybe things will change. Who knows? Like 5 years, 10 years later, maybe things will change. But but for now, I don't see myself stopping or changing anything.
Yeah, cool. So, Ezekiel, before you mentioned that you kind of mentioned aside that you kind of lost a lot of money at some stage, what happened and what was that like for you?
I think I lost. There are two main big stages that I've lost. One is the initial early days, whereby pretty much I lost when I was figuring out trading. In the first 2.5 years, I pretty much lost everything before I built everything. And then once I think that I got it, and like, oh, the young kid got it, and it's like super happy, in a way, boastful, arrogant. I mean, I'm what, only in my early 20s and was like making a lot of money through investing and trading.
Yeah.
But then greed came in, I lost it all. I think that was almost $1 million in my early 20s. So yeah, that really, I would think humbled me to be like, no, you don't know shit. And that's where I think during that period of time, I took a 6 months break. I was like really, really dejected, and finally picked myself back up to look back at the charts again, which was the hardest thing that I could do because it reminded me of everything that I've lost and that kind of thing. So I slowly rebuilt and relook at the whole system to make it even better. And I would think like, even like 5 years back, not 5 years back, 5 years later from then, in my late 20s, again, greed came into the way, and that was also another 7-figure-ish hit. So I think it's investing and trading in a way humbles you as a person. It's the amazing thing is that it throughout the years I see myself growing, whereby I started off with a young, ambitious, aggressive, maybe hot-headed kid. But throughout the years of investing, you kind of know that it calms you down. You know not to be impulsive. You know not to overreact at stuff. And I think it's through all these small experience, small shockbacks and big falls that make me what I am today, in a sense whereby I've grown and I picked up myself from there and really like look at it, the whole investing into a very systematic business point of view, rather than it's like all right, this is going to be a really good trade. I'm going to go like maybe all in, that kind of thing. And so today, I think I'm very systematic, disciplined, which is not easy to say. And form of approach in terms of making trading and investing as a business. I think that is something that, regardless of whether you are the more conservative kind, whether you're more aggressive kind, this is something that I would think that this is being systematic, being disciplined is the approach to trading, regardless of whatever you trade. I mean, I trade stocks, Forex, I trade crypto. Crypto is highly volatile, right? Commodities, that kind of thing. So, but given that I've been trading for more than 20 years, I think it has really grown me as a person, and also, and that's the reason why I have, in a sense, whereby so much to share for traders who have busted their accounts, for traders who have gone for 5 years without making much money, for traders who have done 10, 15 years with making decently good money. And I have been through a lot of all these ups and downs to tell them that, okay, this is where you're at right now. And like, here's the thing to watch out for. When you make good money, here's the thing to watch out for. When you don't make money, here's the thing to watch out for. That kind of thing. Yeah. So, that's has been my story this well. Yeah.
Okay.
So far, hopefully not.
Yeah. No more bus, hopefully.
Yeah,
as long as you follow the system, you should be okay.
No, I've learned not to. So, like these days, I talk about portfolio and that kind of thing, right? So, which is why I'm at this age and the stage whereby, I mean, you got kids, you got mortgages, you got whatsoever, you got bills to pay and that kind of thing. So, I'm no longer as aggressive as before, right? And things are sold up properly. So, even if I take a loss, and these are all like manageable losses, which is expected in the investing or in the trading business.
Just one thing that really hit me is, like, you know, when you kind of lost that $1 million or whatever it is, and when you're early 20s, and then you had to take that 6 month break before you came back. Now, I know for me personally as well, like, you know, how do you kind of like eliminate the ghosts of the past or the ghosts of failure and, you know, overcome those negative feelings of, like, say, whatever got you into, like, say, in your instance, it was trading, right? How do you overcome that negative feelings and those fears around that and start over again? Because that's not easy for someone who has, like, been hit. And, you know, I've been through that myself. So I'm just wondering if you could shed some light on
how it's not easy. I stopped looking at the charts because whenever I refuse to look at the charts, I refuse to look at the trading account, because whatever I do, you remind me of the loss that I had. And I stopped looking at that for quite a while. I think that there will be a period of pain whereby, and during that period of pain, I think it's very important to have someone to share with. If I was lucky, I have my back then girlfriend, now spouse, that kind of thing, right? So I feel that having somebody to talk to open up rather than keep to yourself is very important. Obviously, I didn't tell my parents or anybody, that kind of thing, too ashamed to share, that kind of thing, because all they want to have is their kid who is successful, right? You don't want to, I think at least I'm not the one who want to share the downs that I have. Yeah, luckily I had a listening ear and somebody who is like very encouraging to get me back. It's like, I mean, what is done, right? But so I started to relook at the whole picture. Is like, did I screw up big time? Was there fundamental flaw in the way that I invested, traded, or was it like an impulsive trade? Was it a one-off mistake that? Or was it based on emotions that you know you shouldn't have done? And that was the later, right? So, and with that, I'm like, and all this while I've been doing all right, being pretty okay, except for that big impulsive move that kind of killed me, right? So I started to slowly relook and piece back the pieces and like started to turn up the screen again, still painful, but started to slowly look back and start to scroll through the charts and start to like, get the momentum of it. It took me a while to put money in again, but it came like very strong rules and criteria, like based on lesson learned. So I made myself clear on the lessons that I've learned, the things that I'm going to change. I reflected on them. I'm like, okay, I'm going to use this as an experience to make myself even better. Right? I'm not going to commit the same thing. Mm. And if it's anything, failures is the one that in a way made all the changes to the success that I can have in the future. So that's why I think with all this commitment and really writing that down and firming up in the mind, I slowly built back my confidence and started to do small. And eventually I started I think I can go back and I probably can become better. Right. So yeah, I think there's a period of transition from recognizing the fall to accepting it, to opening up, and then to recognizing it, to applying changes, and then to slowly pick myself back up to and better than before. So yeah, it's not easy, but I think that I feel that in a way it's also a good thing because of all these losses and setbacks. You know the things that you shouldn't do. So like nowadays when people tell me like how much they're risking per trade, they make so much money the last week, that kind of thing. And like, oh, I make 7 figures last week, or I make 6 figures last week. I'm like, oh, cool. What is your trading capital? Oh, 6 figures, for example. You make six figures and then you make 6 figures last week. So how much do you actually risk per trade? And then we're like, oh, okay. All right, cool. You make a good win. I think that's great. Be careful now. Taper down. They're like, oh, why taper down? Like, cool down. I've been there. Right. Get a win. Now restructure yourself. Right. So sometimes we get lucky and then we think that this is the way to go. But after a while, you realize that, hey, luck can only go so far. Right. So yeah. So that's the reason why because I've been through so much and I have a lot of to share in terms of the nuggets. Like when somebody shares me something, like I know I've been there, right? And this is what I thought I did was right then, but now that I look back, actually this is what you should do, right? That kind of thing. So yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think once over time, once the emotion passes away, it's so much easier to look back and say, oh, I now can improve it, right? But at that point in time, it's not that easy, like you said, and you kind of need to go through that process. And maybe it kind of reminded me of, like, you know, how psychiatrists treat people with like phobias, right? If you're afraid of heights, then you kind of like look a little bit over the balcony and then slowly look more, kind of thing, you know. So yeah. Over time you kind of overcome that fear. So yeah, that's very interesting, and you're very lucky to have a partner to actually share your stuff with, because I think the right partner as well, because certain people you shared with them, they're like, oh well, you should have been smarter, why do you make
that mistake,
right? Yeah, and they probably will have left you, so
yeah,
would have been a good way to qualify your future partner as well.
It is.
So Ezekiel, one thing I noticed that, you know, is how you kind of like have this self-discipline that you've acquired through trading and all that stuff. Does that same type of discipline apply to your actual business? And how important is that?
Yeah. I think as an entrepreneur or as a founder, I think discipline is important, but it's really the for example, when I was investing, I was working smart in a sense whereby I was trading smart. I didn't use a lot of hard work. Okay, I did use a lot of hard work to look at the charts, to analyze and that kind of thing, but I was working smart. But as an entrepreneur, you need to work smart and you need to work hard in order to achieve bigness in life and in your business. So because I think what helped me as a trader is that I kind of see the overall bigger perspective, and that's what I think is very crucial into business. Is like for example, when the overall bigger perspective about where you are at right now, where you want to be, what is your short-term goals, what is your big audacious 10-year goals, that kind of thing, and what do you need to do to get to that big audacious goal. right? So that's where you kind of work backwards as like, okay, by the fifth year, by the eighth year, by the fifth year, by the third year, by the second year, by this year, what should you kind of achieve to reach that 10 years audacious goal, right? And kind of break it down. So I'm systematic in that sense whereby I'm able to see the bigger picture, break it down to a smaller picture, break it down to daily tasks. And obviously, as an entrepreneur, as an individual, you can't do all that. So that's where you got to build a team to be to that is wrapped around your goals to achieve the bigger, the 10-year goal, right? So I think the key is like a lot of times when people build a team, they just do what is needed or what they think is needed. But because I'm working it back this way, I'm working also in terms of numbers, right? Big audacious goal include numbers you want to make, right? So when I break it down to the numbers, it's like, okay, in order for me to achieve these numbers, this is the conversion that I need to make. For example, if I'm running ads, right? This is the, even if I'm organically, like this is conversion that I need to have, for example, like in order for me to achieve this X amount, this is the amount of traffic that I need to achieve in order for me to achieve this X amount. And that's where I start to work back to draw down like, right, these are the people that I need and these are the expertise that I need that I'm lacking and that kind of thing to build to that goal. So in a bigger perspective, drill down to a smaller perspective whereby I'm able to look at the smaller things like the numbers, which is something that helped me in a sense whereby I think I'm okay with numbers and also the biggest perspective to drive the overall team direction to hitting them, right? So I think that is something that investing has in a way brought it out in me.
Right. So you're basically looking at, you know, you're the big picture guy that kind of like breaks things down and then looks at, okay, what do we need or who do we need to achieve these things and to bring us to the ultimate goal, right? Which I think is a very good way of thinking about things, because most entrepreneurs I know is like, oh yeah, we need an accountant now, and then they go and hire one, and then we kind of like we're lacking in our marketing, let's go and hire someone to do the marketing. So it's like the other way around, whereas you're like, yeah, plan the big picture first and then work backwards.
I think to add on that point is that so even when we are like finding people and hiring people, right, I even like certain departments that let's say I'm setting up, like let's say for example outreach, like for example I know nuts about outreach, so what I would do is that I will go and find a consultant who is really good and proven in outreach, for example, and that's where he will consult me and maybe my team head on the person that I'm going to hire to work on that department. So in every department that I set up and or every venture or every project that I'm starting, I always try to find somebody who is already like really good in that field and to gain insights so that I know that when I jump in, I have the highest probability of winning rather than going in and trying to figure things out on my own and waste like maybe 6 months, 1 year, 2 years while figuring out. Whereas like I could get an expert insight and ongoing consult and in a sense whereby until the team is able to perform without the guy, right? It's like, okay, you guys got it. I think that is really, really important.
That's really good because you have a mentor, kind of a coach kind of thing to kind of guide your team as well.
Exactly. And it's like, I mean, like we are marketers, right? It's like getting to know the latest insight, getting to know what somebody has tested that work, that kind of thing. I think these are like really, really important. Whether is it like buying a course for my team on what this guy has figured out, that kind of stuff. I think like even if we can pick up some golden nugget from some guy who has tested this, and that would translate to like a lot more sales for us. So I truly believe in the ongoing learning and education, especially in business.
Nice. Okay, Ezekiel, one thing, you know, I kind of picked up when we first talked is that you basically don't really do paid ads for your business and you're growing it through organically and partnership and all that stuff. And that's quite unique. Can you just explain the whole strategy behind it?
Yeah, okay. In fact, I only like truly ran organic like paid ads like in the later part of the game, and like organic referral has always been the core. I think what is important is building the brand in a sense whereby, like when somebody look at you and look at your site and look at the, what you offer, is like, am I really getting value out of this? And I truly believe that even for all coaches, experts, founders, that kind of thing, we all try to create something that we think we are good at. But and also there are also a lot of people who pops up stuff whereby they just learn something and then they create something, right? So I think it's important to really build something that maybe can in terms of like, if let's say that the topic is classic, for example, it should be able to like go down 40 years down the road and still be the classic. And it's like, okay, this is the go-to guide, even though we are 40 years later. Like, like for example, the Dale Carnegie, like How to Win Friends, that kind of thing, right? That kind of book, right? So that is what I always have in mind, like when I was creating my one core program in Asia Forex Mentor, right? So it's like, And I put it up front on my website. This is something that I hope 40 years down the road, it will become a classic, right? So I truly believe in really, really committing and building the best program that you can give out there. And the word will spread, because there's no point in creating something that's 6:30 and then after that, the reviews will screw you up and then you got what? Restart again, but your branding is screwed, right? So I think building a real solid program is very important because that is what you stand for, and then to start to grow the brand and what you believe and the vision behind the company. So I think we were lucky in a sense whereby publications started to pick us up in terms of quality when we started to generate reviews, that kind of thing, like Investopedia started to pick us up. And it's like they review our program. It's like they rated it like good. So it's and organically we grew, right? My team is also working on the socials as well. So that is also another aspect in terms of socials. I think what is interesting in terms of social media is that social media has two aspects. One aspect is the viralness of it, that is everybody that's trying to create viralness, viral videos such that you're banned. But if you see like viral videos on business stuff, let's say you are trying to promote your business, it's a lot harder than you are an influencer who are just doing some maybe TikTok dance, that kind of thing. It's a different ball game on its own. So we got to do viral trendy stuff, but we also got to do business related stuff that people like after, in a sense, after they watch a viral video, they kind of way know who you are, but then they look at your in-depth content and be like, ooh, this is something that I want to learn from. So it's like, there's a strategy behind social media. There's a strategy behind even like SEO, that kind of thing, which we have got pretty good at as well. So like organically, the SEO, social media, and referrals. That's where we started to build our referrals, our branding, our affiliates, and they kind of like, I think that we kind of look at all these different aspects and focus on all of them to grow the overall branding of EFM. That's the reason why the good thing about being organic is that I don't have to rely on ads. Again, it's not easy to build a strong organic profile, but if it's anything, like, and now I can like, okay, go full on ads because now my base is built, for example, right? Versus if I'm just running on ads, if my ads doesn't work, then I'm screwed. Right. So yeah, I'm kind of like doing the other way, but it's the harder way actually, rather than just creating a product, test an ad, and then run an ad, optimize it to become fully successful. Then after that, build the organic. So I think I kind of did the harder way. But both ways are actually really, really important.
Yeah. So build for the long term with that brand, because once you have that brand, you get referrals and you get good reviews and organic traffic as well, then, you know, just boost it with ads. So I think both are so important. But I like it, because most people would just start with ads, right? And, you know, even without investing properly in their product creation or something, and then, you know, they get bad reviews and people rubbish them and all that stuff. And then it just becomes a short-term game. And then you can't really build a strong brand over the long term. And, you know, you won't have like people like Investopedia coming to pick you up and, you know, being your partner as well. So Ezekiel, one last thing I want to ask you is like, you know, you have been doing seminars, maybe some webinars. Have you been doing some webinars as well?
Not really webinars.
So maybe seminars, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So you used to do seminars. So if you think back then to seminars, what would be the biggest tip that you would share to an expert who wants to do seminars to make it successful?
Okay. So yeah, I think seminars are like online. Webinars are like online seminars, right? So it's pretty much the same thing.
Correct.
So the concept really runs the same. So I run seminars. I run in the past when I run events to convert those events into courses, for example. So you run those big events and then after which you sell them on the stage, and then that's where they go to your smaller seminars, your smaller events, smaller courses that you have sold them. And like running ads for courses and the kind of thing. So, you know, when they say the key is in the lease, right? The money is in the lease. That is really true. In a sense whereby, today, if we were to run a new program, if we were to run a new seminar, today, if we run a new course, for example, we would just blast it out to our list, and then we would have, in a way, the first group of customers. And the beauty behind it is that there's no marketing spend at all. It's just running it to your list. And when you run it to your list, that's where you don't have the best like product, but you have it all in here. So that's where you kind of like, it's like a beta test with your group of people to kind of create the best program out there. And then after you get the FAQs and you ask them like what should be added, that kind of thing. Then you put it together. Obviously the content is great, but you are always out there to want to achieve bigger and better stuff, right? And these are like, boom, you got your instant sale, you know your market validity, like, okay, this product is going to work, all right? This sales script is not going to work, that kind of thing, because you got a list to blast it off. But in initial days, when we were running seminars, we were running through ads, right? Running through paid ads. And it's really a conversion game. It's really like a conversion game whereby, you put an ad, the return on ad spends, that kind of thing. So, and I think the key is to always to continue to build your list, whether you're running ad spend or whatsoever. And you will come to a point whereby these people are not, if they like you, they're not going to buy one program from you. They're going to buy multiple programs and learn deeper from you if you are delivering what you have promised, right? So, run ads, build a strong following, and I think that at the end of the day, if you really deliver what you promise and over deliver with something that I try to do it every single time, the word of mouth will come. And you just grow and compound from there. But yeah, the money is in the list.
Nice. Yeah. So do you nurture your list as well on a regular basis?
Do I nurture my list? I have to admit that I'm not really focusing on that right now. But we got a process on in terms of when somebody joins the list, we kind of nurture them to the sale. And then if they don't make a sale, then what happens subsequent until we eventually have something for them, right? And then after that, we will classify them in terms of like breaking them down in terms of like, okay, these are the buyers, these are higher tier clients, these are clients who bought the average stuff. So we kind of break them down into all the different structure in the or funnels at the back of all these lists. And then we try to nurture those that who haven't bought it. Maybe it's not the right time, or that kind of thing. So we try to bring back. One thing that I think that that I have not done is to kind of like relook at the list, and like I said, the money is in the list, but sometimes these people would like stop reading your emails and that kind of stuff. So it's always good to refresh them and to check in with them. Are they still interested? Otherwise, it's time to do a reboot and remove people who are not necessary to be part of the list, right? So that helps in a lot of aspect, but I think there's again, like as you know, as a marketer, there's a different way of structure behind the lease and that kind of thing, but what is really really important is to capture the lead every single time, even if they don't buy from you in the first place.
Nice. All right, Ezekiel, thanks so much for this interview. I think, you know, we've talked about, you know, strategies to overcome setbacks a lot. We talked about, you know, business, and you've talked about marketing. So I think we've covered a lot of ground. So thank you so much, Ezekiel, for freely sharing. If people want to know more about you and what you do, where do you suggest they follow you?
So, I mean, if you want to learn about investing and trading, the best place to go is AsiaForexMentor.com. If it's anything, just check out my socials. I'm on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. Yeah.
Okay. Fantastic. We will have all of Ezekiel's social handles on the show notes. So make sure you check him out and follow him. Thanks so much for being on the show, Ezekiel.
Thank you, Terrence, for having me.